mean for a message of some sort or another.
Is KAZU, Pacific Grove, California. It is Monterey Bay Public Radio. My name is Mae Brussel. Before I begin the program, I'll say that the views expressed here are those of myself and do not necessarily reflect the views of KAZU staff or board of directors. We thank Coast Components at 684-1185, the Monterey Bay Area's distributor of electronic components. Thank you for the underwriting grant that helps bring you the following hour of World Watchers. The following hour, World Watchers, is also made possible in part by Lowdown, a leading manufacturer of microcomputer peripherals located in Scotts Valley. For more information, call 438-7400. The name of this broadcast is World Watchers. As I said, I'm Mae Brussel. It is program number 833, November the 23rd, 1987. The anniversary of the assassination of John Kennedy just went by this Sunday, just yesterday. I didn't even mention it on the program. I usually dedicate at least 1 hour a year to the assassination of John Kennedy, but most of all of my research started the day that John Kennedy was killed, and I consider the research that I do every week as part of the investigative work of those people who are behind the murder of John Kennedy. They connect in one way or another, or I wouldn't be using the material in the first place, and I often make the connections that are not so obvious for you. And in remembrance of John Kennedy's assassination, I've continued to study what is called the secret government. Somebody asked me before the program if I had seen that program that Bill Moyers had on television on the secret government, and we were talking about that. Well, that's what I've been studying since 1963, November 22nd, and Bill Moyers, who was press secretary to Lyndon Johnson through those years and was from the CIA, or possibly could be, I don't know how many people leave the CIA any more than they ever leave the mafia, did have a wonderful program for people who want to begin to understand about that secret government that's been going on in this country for a long time. I will do more on the Bill Moyers program in a few weeks, hopefully. He did a very long broadcast on the secret government as far back as 1981 and detailed some of the Iran-Contra persons back in that time period in the Bay of Pigs. So I'll go back to that broadcast and refer to the specifics of how he was detailing this even a long time ago. The Iran-Contra report is out. You can order it from the Superintendent of Documents in Washington, D.C. The zip code is 20402-9325. It's $29 if you're in a hurry. Otherwise, the New York Times is printing it in the paperback for $9.95, but you might go blind reading it, so maybe the extra money would be worth it, because I'm sure it'll be very tiny print like the Tower Report. Also, the hearings are being made available, and I'll mention it for you students of history. This is the way I collected the Warren Commission hearings. Actually, they came in one batch, but these are going to be printed one or two a month. So starting with the testimony of Richard Secord, that's $19, and Robert McFarland's testimony is $23 if you're interested in receiving those as they come out from the government printing office. They are available now. Seymour Hersh had a long article in yesterday's Examiner Chronicle titled Secret Army Unit Aided the CIA Efforts. This is about the Special Operations Division. Seymour Hersh writes in this article about a group called, the abbreviation is DCSOPS, the Special Operations Division, and under that, the DCSOPS, a group that wore civilian clothes, unmarked airplanes, trained off military bases, the SOAB, the Special Operations Aviation Battalion, that was used in Grenada, the Sea Spray Group, unknown until 1985, the ISA, the Intelligence Support Activity, and the important thing about this article, and it's a two-part article, and I hope Seymour Hersh writes about it, is that the special operation units that link directly to Oliver North have a direct relationship to his Delta Force. And I'll be doing a lot more on this article, the two-part article, soon. And the Delta Force is the group that Maurice Aquino is a member of from Southeast Asia. And I truly do believe that the glassy-eyed look that Oliver North has and the relationship between the mind control of Aquino and the use of Oliver North in direct contact to G. Gordon Liddy, whose work with the Nazi Odessa, will put us smack into the Himmler Castle, into the Pentagon, and the Special Forces. So while I'm not going to do part three tonight, I'll continue next week probably to continue the scandal of West Point Presidio, child molestation, the occult in the military, and update that for you, getting back to it next week. There are links that can be made absolutely to the Delta Force, to Aquino, to West Point, and then to North and the Delta Force, and Liddy advising North with an instant communication into Liddy's home, and I think we'll end up right with the Waffen-SS, the Gestapo, the Odessa. So I just mentioned this article. It was in the Examiner Chronicle yesterday, and part two wasn't out today, so I imagine it'll follow very quickly. Also, there was a major article in the San Francisco Examiner Friday, November the 20th, and again, I'm going to spend a long time on it. The title of the report is Iran Reports Omissions. We hear a lot about the report that just came out. The three major omissions listed in this article are, one, the assassination plots. They only mention the plan to kill U.S. Ambassador Tams, Louis Tams, and also Eden Pastora, formerly with the Contras. The second parts left out were the drug deals of the Contras, and of course that goes to Felix Rodriguez and George Bush's man, Mr. Gregg, and the allegations of these people. Of course, it goes right to George Bush's office with the drug deals. And the third part is the 1980 arms deals are barely mentioned, the assassination, the drugs, and the arms deals. And Barbara Honegger, who lives in Pacific Grove, has done the most extensive work on the way the election was stolen in 1980 by making a deal, cutting a deal with the higher authorities to hold the hostages until the elections and the inauguration was over, that the hostages would come in return for weapons that would be sold continuously to Khomeini starting as early as 1981. The deal was cut in 1980. As a matter of fact, this long article has a picture of Barbara Honegger in there, and Richard Allen and Bonnie Sauter, the former president of Iran, who confirms the Honegger allegations of the stealing of an election. And, of course, they've been stolen since 1960, when in 63 Kennedy's brains were blown out, and in 1968 when Robert Kennedy's brains were blown in the Ambassador Hotel, those headshots, and then the Chappaquiddick that took Ted Kennedy out of the running, and the shooting of George Wallace, and the shooting, not the shooting, the poisoning of Nelson Rockefeller when he was deep sixed, and the elections have either been blackmailed and literally stolen or the bullets came. But the important thing is that this is a major front page story on the 80 arms deal that's barely mentioned, the drugs and assassination plots, and a full page on page four. So here is somebody from Pacific Grove who has pursued this story, wrote it in these times, presented all these papers to the proper authorities, and it looks like there's going to be an investigation in Congress by various persons on this stealing of the election. This investigation took place regarding the Carter papers, but this is worse, keeping the hostages locked up for an extra 70 days or so, and then arming Iran immediately afterwards and keeping the arms flowing. And the new Iran-Contra report says that Oliver North intended to continue to arm Khomeini, even the people that kept the hostages locked up, and the worst terrorists that were involved in killing the Marines at the in Lebanon, that North was going to continue sending them to arms even when there were no hostages. But the rest of the evening, I just mentioned those briefly because they take an entire hour for each of those sections. I'm going to cover a story which I think is important that hasn't been covered properly, that deserves the remaining 50 minutes because of the implications. And you may think the story is over, but it has to do with Judge Douglas Ginsburg, his getting out of the capability of being a justice on the Supreme Court. Had very little to do with smoking grass, I believe, and I believe he was an agent provocateur when he was smoking the marijuana at Harvard. He bragged about being the most further right in the Justice Department, and that included Mr. Reynolds and Edwin Meese, and Ginsburg has been embraced by the right wing, the very factors that would know if he were an agent provocateur and what he's been doing since his college days, and they were anxious to reward him, even though he'd been on a judge only 1 year. Appointed by Ronald Reagan, they were to reward him with this key position and look the other way. It was some very interesting news people who pulled out the story of his past, and within 11 days, that nomination was sealed up. Now, just before he was nominated, there was a long article. I'm citing the LA Times. It was also in the San Francisco Chronicle. Albert Hakim contempt citation is reversed, and this has to do with Albert Hakim not having to tell the investigators, or Lawrence Walsh, about eight different foreign countries that were used to funnel weapons to Iran. And the justices that made the decision that favored Albert Hakim were none other than Judge Harry Edwards, Mr. Ginsburg, and Judge James Buckley. Now, Ginsburg and Buckley were appointed judgeships by Ronald Reagan. Buckley was longtime CIA, like his brother William Buckley. He's also a Knight of Malta. He was head of the U.S. Information Agency, -CIA. He was made a judge last year, and Ginsburg was made a judge, and they should have disqualified themselves because Hakim holds the secrets to the Reagan administration with his eight dummy fronts and where the businesses went. So the two people, I haven't even checked who appointed Judge Harry Edwards to the bench, but this past year, 1986, Ginsburg and Buckley were put on the bench, so of course, they, in return, protected Albert Hakim and Richard Secord and their Swiss-based companies, eight companies that are overseas, in addition to the Swiss bank accounts. They should have been out, and then as soon as he made that decision, within 2 weeks, he was nominated to be Chief Justice on the Supreme Court. Now, the Iran-Contra hearings, just from the headlines, give you an inkling of what was going on in the White House, and the very fact that it's so loud and clear about Ronald Reagan and Edwin Meese makes you wonder what right they have. Have they earned the right to appoint the next three justices on the Supreme Court? This is the next one. And the Bork case was a disaster, and they were pushing harder than anyone could imagine, Reagan and me specifically, to get Ginsburg. So there's things about Ginsburg that forced me to look further into him because of the pressure. The headlines on the Iran-Contra, just some of them this past week, was President let zealots subvert the law, and the chief law officer is named here. Another headline, New York Times, Constitution principles violated. Monterey Herald, Meese may have tried to hide his role in the ransom plan. Another San Jose Mercury, Reagan faulted the inquiry. Reports say the aides hindered the investigation. Another headline, scandal probe reports hits report hits Reagan and Meese the hardest. And another, in sum, Reagan failed the Iran-Contra scandal resulted from a breakdown of leadership and laws. Another headline, a disdain for government, cause for a problem. Another headline, Reagan tolerated climate for scandal, harsh criticism of Casey and Meese. And the headlines go on, Reagan is unmoved that Meese is a bungler. Of course, he's unmoved by that. Another headline, cabal of zealots showed disdain for law. Now, those are the two that are going to choose our justice of the Supreme Court. Another special prosecutor focusing on the illegal war out of the White House. Another headline, Meese at the heart of the cover-up. And another one, panel findings leave little doubt that laws were violated. I typed out from the newspapers I take about 40 of the headlines just from last week, and that's the way the story goes. Now, James Kilpatrick, no great liberal, pretty far right, wrote an article about Edwin Meese, November the 13th, called The Blundering Meese. And it says, in the wake of the Ginsburg fiasco, Reagan ought to take a useful step and fire the consummate bungler, Attorney General Edwin Meese. What he did was get a man like Ginsburg, who was doomed by all the other people, to give biographical details that started to pile up. He created a Ginsburg that dropped, and these were all true, that dropped out of Cornell to found a computerized dating service, and I'm going into the dating service. He married an anti-nuclear activist. That marriage ended a divorce. Subsequently, he married Hallie Morgan, an obstetrician who was doing abortions. In 1968, Ginsburg was actively supporting Robert Kennedy's candidacy for president. He assisted as a law clerk to Black Thurgood Marshall. At Harvard Law School, he didn't class himself as a Jew. He was not actively a Jew. In 1980, he acquired stock in a Toronto company involving the news media. And this article explains about his role in conflict of interest there. Meese blundered, and this is what the far-right gentleman Kilpatrick said, who loved Edwin Meese and Reagan almost to this point, and the conservatives are mad at them. Meese blundered. That is the long and short of it. He foisted upon the president a nominee who could be depicted as the ultimate bearded hippie of the 60s. The caricature is cruel and untrue. But in this town, perception counts for more than reality. How could Meese have done this to the president? And the answer is, I believe that Jesse Helms and Strom Thurmond and Meese and Orrin Hatch knew that all that cover was a agent provocateur from the 1960s, that time period when he went from Cornell to Harvard and as a Harvard professor, he could be busting people around him, give the image of being a hippie liberal with the black, having a Jewish name, but not a practicing Jew, helping Robert Kennedy, and that's an interesting link. The wife was in the anti-war demonstrations. He had all the bona fides of a liberal, but he also had the bona fides of an agent provocateur that became very useful during those periods when the FBI had Operation Chaos and the COINTEL program. Edwin Yoder Jr., he's a syndicated columnist in Washington, who wrote for the Los Angeles Times an article called Triumph of Illusion Over Substance in the Ginsburg Case. And he said Judge Douglas Ginsburg's pot-smoking indiscretion was a grave disqualification, but he said from the moment Ginsburg confessed to having smoked a bit of marijuana as a college student and a law professor, he became an inanimate department store mannequin. The Ginsburg nomination was first from first to last, from hot air alpha to flaming omega, another, in quotes, story to which mere information was almost entirely irrelevant, that when Reagan introduced obscure Ginsburg October 29th, an East Room media spectacular, the keynote was the judge's special solicitude for law and order, his hard way with criminals, even though he never even had a case, and he was involved in communications and antitrust and business law. And what Yoder is talking about is the illusion over the substance, what was going on. Now, Ginsburg did give some opinions in 1984 on banning public speech on television and cutting off the public access to people whose speeches were irrelevant. And he had a lot of articles in think tank publications on the news media and ways to block the First Rights Amendment of the public, but to give it to the cable television to cut off equal time. And his opinions on the media are important, but the illusion of him as that hippie, pot-smoking, laid-back professor are just an illusion, and that's what I want to go into. Also, there was an article in the Washington Times on Ginsburg's ties to faith is unclear. He did work as an aide to a black chief justice, or justice of the Supreme Court, rather, but they weren't sure if he was Jewish. His child is by the second marriage has a non-Jewish maiden name that the child uses. He's not affiliated with any synagogue, and they try to look up his background as a Jew. He had no known affiliation in Washington, D.C. or elsewhere to synagogues, and the children took on Gentile names, and he has not been seen in synagogues, and I wondered immediately when he was appointed just where that story was going. given the likes of Meese and Orrin Hatch and Strom Thurmond and Jesse Helms. It was always Helms and Hatch and Thurmond and Meese who were pushing this person above all others. And you know something had to be wrong because those people are so right-wing fascist, you know, supporting the death squads in Central South America and the far, far right, not the conservatives. Now, the headlines were full of stories. Aspirations of an entire generation may go up in smoke because Ginsburg had joints and smoked marijuana. So they tried to turn it to that so that any future candidates who or political appointees who had had a joint are automatically ruled out. If Ginsburg pays his dues, you pay your dues. And that was, pardon the pun, a smokescreen. Another article, I have many on the grass, saying uproar over pot use forces Reagan's court choice to quit. And I don't believe it was the pot choice that forced him to quit. Another, Ginsburg's pot confession has Washington a Twitter, and Ginsburg was the victim of cultural collision. Those are lies important enough for me to spend an hour with you. It wasn't a cultural collision. The pot was probably approved of by the hires up because we don't know who got the pot that he handed out or sold, but there were stiff penalties and prison terms and fees, and I'm sure those people are long gone, still in jail, or can't even remember that he could be an agent provocateur, but thought, oh gosh, when I went to Harvard, he smoked joints with us. Isn't it funny that we maybe got arrested or didn't graduate? And look, he can't even be a justice because he smoked, and we did too, so that's his punishment. It's all equal. Well, don't believe that's what it was about Ginsburg. Another story from the LA Herald. President is now victim of his own war on drugs. He only became a victim when some reporters caught up with him, and then the Newsweek and Time magazine, Time, both had articles on this, one titled, The Sins of the Past, Drug Use Derails Ginsburg's Nomination, and Newsweek, Pot and Politics. And now the head of the FBI, former Judge Sessions, now FBI William Sessions, said that the FBI is going to investigate and review why its five background investigations of Ginsburg didn't determine why their agents didn't learn about the pot smoking when the news media knew. And I say, I know they knew about that. They know who was an agent, who was an informer, and they passed it up, but somebody else picked up the pot. So he wants to find out, how do you know we didn't see it? And I don't believe for a minute they didn't see it. And another story, FBI to investigate its own probe of Ginsburg's background. But there were other things in his background that came out that caused him quickly, as I say, within 11 days, to be wiped out. Now, Strom Thurmond was the gentleman who tried in the 70s to deport John Lennon because he was found with some hashish or marijuana in a shoe that was found when he moved from one house to another in London, and he'd come to the United States, and it was a six-year-old charge. And for that, the Senator Strom Thurmond headed a team starting in the early 70s to get Lennon deported. He didn't like his politics, and he didn't want him around singing or peace demonstrations during the 1972 campaign. But all of a sudden, Strom Thurmond and Jesse Helms and the old gang, Orrin Hatch, saying it's a great appointment, boys will be boys. That was the 60s. He was one of the gang. And Ronald Reagan and Edwin Meese in California were busting people right and left, going into the vans, the cars, the communes. Remember those days, the campsites breaking everybody's back? And why is it okay to, of course it was okay for the law professor to be smoking the joints, because then separately the people who have it or got the grass from them could be busted and not associated with the professor. So that's the fervor of the 60s, when it was terrible to be having the pot, and now these people are saying, well, that was perfectly all right. It has nothing to do with his nomination. Now, there are several articles that came out in favor of Mr. Ginsburg, Douglas Ginsburg, and some that questioned what he was about. The San Francisco Examiner had an article saying he only had experience of 1 year as a judge, but Ginsburg said he appreciated the confidence that Reagan had placed in him. An article from the San Francisco Examiner, another one, said Ginsburg was not taken seriously as a nominee until a last minute after serious lobbying by Attorney General Meese. He appeared at the last minute, and when Reagan walked to the podium to announce Ginsburg's selection, Meese was in the audience getting congratulations and handshakes, There was concern about Ginsburg that he wouldn't get the nomination. He was selected, according to all accounts, because Meese prevailed on Reagan to name an ideological clone of Judge Bork. Ginsburg's record is one of rigid adherence to Edwin Meese's style of conservatism. Alan Cranston, senator, said Ginsburg is a surprising choice given his age and his limited judicial experience. They expected somebody more qualified. And Orrin Hatch, senator, said Ginsburg is one of the brightest legal minds. I couldn't be more elated. So the conservatives knew a lot about him. And as I say, he described himself at various times as more conservative than Edwin Meese and William Bradford Reynolds. And that past seemed to wash away. Another story from the San Francisco Examiner said that White House officials had endorsed Judge Kennedy for the job, but Meese insisted that Ginsburg be there. He flew into town. He had been in California for the funeral of his grandson. He flew into town on Wednesday night, and Thursday he went to Reagan. And Thursday morning they had a meeting that lasted 20 minutes, and Ginsburg then was announced as the nominee. This story said Meese, the burly former Alameda County Deputy District Attorney, known for his mule-like stubbornness and profound influence over Reagan, had turned the tide. And when Meese has his mind on something, this article says you have to worry when Meese says it, wherever he's involved, it's confrontation time. So there was a shift to Ginsburg. And Ginsburg had offices in California for his dating service that I'm going into, that I believe was both the reason he was nominated to be one of the reasons to be a justice on the court, and also the reason he was defeated. It sort of backfired on him. But San Jose Mercury had a story just briefly touching the dating service. Ginsburg founded a dating service in 1960s. It was one of the nation's first computer dating services, and then he went on to antitrust business, and while teaching Harvard Law, he represented Chase Manhattan Corporation in advising them. Well, Henry Kissinger was put into Harvard as part of the Chase Manhattan operation by the Rockefeller family, Nelson David Rockefeller, John J. McCloy, who helped Kissinger go into Harvard as soon as World War II was over, is on the board of Chase Manhattan, an attorney for Chase Manhattan. And here is Mr. Ginsburg also advising Chase Manhattan at Harvard from the same place that Henry Kissinger came from when his military papers say that he went to Harvard University. That's part of his military record. Ginsburg also represented, while teaching Harvard Law School, and they stopped him from doing it, the State Street Boston Corps, the telephone companies owned by General GTE, the Fidelity Group of Mutual Funds. And, of course, the San Jose Mercury said, the entry of Ginsburg's dating service, and that's what I want to get to, is clearly the most unusual entry in the resume of Judge Douglas Ginsburg. That was in the New York Times. He left college to found a nationwide computer service called Operation Match. Operation Match has to be a CIA-FBI operation. The COINTEL programs that were set up in the 60s, just the time that he set that up, the Operation Chaos, those were the names of activities of agencies, not of a 19-year-old who soon gets resumes of 90,000 people on their sexual preferences. Operation Match, that opened offices in Cambridge, Massachusetts, Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, and so forth. Now, I've cited several weeks ago the role of Ronald Reagan as an FBI informer in 1941, and that came out in the New Yorker just October the 5th, 1987. A friend sent me that New Yorker article. I also have mentioned several times that Henry Kissinger was an FBI informer in the 1950s. This information came out in the New York Times in 1979. And Klaus Barbie was an informer for the Gestapo as part of the Frederick Wilhelm Gymnasium just prior to World War II, in 1933 and 1934, informing on Catholic youth and students over in Germany, getting information about students. So we have a history that goes through the informer stage that Lyndon Johnson used with his various whorehouses, if you can call them that, entrapment residences. Richard Nixon used them with the Operation Chaos and the COINTEL program. Hitler had the purple houses and entrapment of men with women or women with men, whichever were your targets, were a common form of espionage in early Germany, just before Hitler came to power, and certainly through the entire era. And then in the United States with J. Edgar Hoover and Bobby Baker and Lyndon Johnson, and then the Watergate exposés revealed the floating boats, the yachts, that were to be in Miami to entrap politicians with the use of Tony Lasiewicz and Herbert Kalmbach, the attorney for Richard Nixon's espionage operations and also for United Airlines, giving salaries to the likes of Tony Lasiewicz. Men and women were used to entrap politicians for getting them later, defaming them, stop their careers, blackmailing them, getting them into important committees, and then pulling out this evidence that would break their political careers. So I'm going to take a one-minute break. Now it's the end of the first half hour.